Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. This biggity boy's a diggity dog. I have them like Miley Cyrus, clothes off, twerking in their bras and thongs. Timber. Face down, booty up. Timber. That's the way we like the wood. Timber. I'm sicker than an oil spill. She says she won't, but I bet she will. Timber. Swing your partner.
That's right. It is going down. 7 p.m. on the dot here on the West Coast. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd on the Double is rolling.
Man, this is I feel like it's been a little bit of a while, Sean Wally. I mean, you know, we had our 100th show and we celebrated that in grand style. And it seems like I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks.
True story. The international schedule got in the way, and you know, you were busy yourself, which some things we need to touch on too with what you've been up to and new ventures that you're doing and some great things happening in your life. But we're back and live here on the Double.
Well, you know, I think our listeners need to know that just for a brief moment in your life, you're back in the United States, back in the Connecting 48, and to be more specific, back in the Pacific Northwest, and it's good to have you back, man.
Man, it feels good to be back where it all started, the original DSX studios in Richland, and, you know, having all the bells and whistles that accompany that, and being able to be, you know, on the home soil and not have to be in who knows what hotel and who knows what city and what country.
Yeah, so it's a little bit euphoric for you. So you're back in your old stomping grounds. Got a chance to be on the west side a little bit. Of course, getting a chance to see mom, grandma, and all the family and everything. How was that coming back?
Oh, it was great, you know, being able to just unwind, relax. The toughest part about it was trying to get the time change right and get my body clock right. I was waking up at 3 and 4 in the morning for most of this last week, probably until Friday rolled around, until I actually was sleeping till 6-7 in the morning, getting up at a halfway normal hour versus 3 and 4 a.m.
Now, isn't it interesting that you jaunt all the way around the world with the Globetrotters? And, you know, I don't recall you actually being under the weather at all. And I mean, it was a strenuous schedule that you partook here in the United States and then overseas. But then when you get back to relax here, when you get back to relax, you come down with a little bit of the flu, maybe?
You know, Sean, there is a tough stomach bug going around the Puget Sound right now. And unfortunately, a lot of the family is passing that around. And I got hit with it late Thursday night into Friday morning. And so my Friday, I was out of it. Half a Saturday, I was worthless. And started getting a little energy back Saturday evening, and Sunday was much, much better, and today is better still. So things are looking up there, but still got to check in on Grandma and a few other people that are not doing the greatest right now.
Well, I can tell you here in Northern California, I mean, it's kind of been dismal for this time of the year. What I mean by that is not 85 to 90 degrees. It's actually a good, comfortable 70 to 74, 75 degrees. I can't complain. But the beautiful studios here in Elk Grove, California, all is well on all fronts there. And so, you know, just ready to talk some sports, get everybody up to date on what's been going on around the world in sports. Of course, there's been some exciting stuff going on, Sean, as far as the NBA is concerned. I know we've had a chance to take a look, see, and what's going on. You know, it really bugs me to actually even bring up the subject of the NBA because I know it's still a stickler for all the people in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Tacoma, actually the whole state of Washington, and you can say Oregon, as far as the Seattle Supersonics not being around. Of course, the Portland Trail Blazers making an early exit in the NBA playoffs. But now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, Sean. We're talking about the final four, if you will, two in the East, two in the West. You've got the Hawks versus the Cavaliers, LeBron James and company trying to lick their wounds because they have quite a few injuries. Of course, Kyrie Irving getting injured the last game, and And he seems to be a ready for game one coming up. So that should be fun. And that starts Wednesday, May the 20th. That, and of course, Atlanta holds that home field. But here's what I'm excited about the most, Sean Wally, and you know this, and all my listeners here in Northern California, the Golden State Warriors taking on the Houston Rockets. Of course, the Houston Rockets coming off of a tough, tough series against the Los Angeles Clippers. And at one point, Sean, it looked like the LA Clippers had it, had the series locked. But something happened in game five to where things just went awry. And, man, the rest is history. I've never seen a collapse like that, but I'm excited. I'm excited about Steph Curry and company starting out tomorrow. And that game starts 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on ESPN. And Steph Curry gets to go up against James Harden in what could be called a one-on-one matchup on who's really the MVP. But we all know that Steph Curry is the MVP. So some fun, exciting stuff happening in the NBA, Sean.
You know, I have to admit, I'm somewhat enticed by the Houston-Golden State matchup. How happy do you think James Harden is to not be in Oklahoma City right now? That they chose to get rid of him, and now he has a chance to possibly move on to the NBA Finals. And not to say that he's a bitter man or that, you know, he has a thorn to pick with the Thunder for getting rid of him, but he may have a chip on his shoulder. Who knows? You know, they decided to keep Russell and KD together, and, you know, they're great players, but it hasn't worked out well for them since they let Harden go. And now here Harden is, one of the better players in the NBA, teamed with Dwight Howard, going up against one of the better teams as well in the entire NBA, the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry. You know, it's going to be a fun matchup.
Yeah, you know, and as you're saying, it is a great feat for James Harden to, you know, bring his team into this Western Conference Finals. And, you know, of course, being a lot better than the Oklahoma City Thunder. But more importantly, you know, he's got a bone to pick with Steph Curry. If you want to pick battles, I mean, he finished second in the MVP voting. So that's incentive for him. And great players always find a way to have motivation. And I think that James Harden has more than enough motivation. These guys are riding a three-game winning streak. They were down 3-1 to the Clippers, miraculously come back and win that series. You know, something that's very rarely done. And, you know, these guys have a lot of momentum going. And you're talking about Dwight Howard that's helping him out. But let's not forget Seattle native Jason Terry, Franklin High School in Seattle. And, of course, they have Gilbert Arriza as well to help them out. And so this should be a great matchup for the Golden State Warriors. They're a team that, meaning the Houston Rockets, they're a team that can actually shoot perimeter-wise and they can actually slash to the basket. And they have strong bigs. Where the Golden State Warriors have the edge is the Golden State Warriors, let's face it, they just every shot for them is a layup, whether it's a 30-footer or a slam dunk. Every shot is high percentage for them. They just have to stay hot. And so if the Golden State Warriors can do that, then I see no reason for them not to look forward to being in the NBA championship.
And it seems to be that the trouble with the Rockets that they're going to have to overcome is the defensive side of the ball. It's like that seems to be their one Achilles heel, and they definitely need to work on that.
Yeah, so, you know, the Houston Rockets are a team that can run up and down, not necessarily known for stopping, you know, making a lot of stops. And here's the thing, when you talk about the Golden State Warriors, though, Sean, the big thing about the Golden State Warriors is that people talk about is, oh, man, they're just out there shooters, they're outside shooters. Well, lest we forget that they are the number one defensive team in the NBA for the regular season, and they have proved that during the playoffs as well. By holding teams such as the Memphis Grizzlies under 80 points. I believe they did that 3 times, and they are tough as nails as far as defense is concerned. So I think this is a great recipe for the Golden State Warriors. It's theirs to win, but you can't overlook how tough the Houston Rockets are. And one of the biggest question marks is will Dwight Howard actually show up and play a good series? and will Andrew Bogut actually show up as well? So watching the post play is definitely pivotal for both teams.
Well, let's go out to the Chandler Reach Winery Hotline and welcome in a guy that knows a thing or two about basketball, Brandon Hogg, international basketball player. Brandon, thanks for your time tonight.
How's it going, Sean? Glad to be back.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for being on the show, man. And, of course, we are talking about the NBA playoffs. And, of course, you being from the Midwest, you know, I'm kind of thinking that maybe you would be rooting for LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I could be wrong, though. Who's your team?
I would like to see Cavaliers do a good run for it, but my favorite player is Jason Terry, so I'm rooting a little bit for the Rockets.
Okay, so there must be a little similarity between your play and Jason Terry's play.
I would like to think so. I would like to think so, but, you know, he's on a way different level right now. So.
Well, of course, we always love JT, you know, because he's from the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, he's done some great things, and there are a lot of players from up in that area that are doing some cool stuff. Jamal Crawford just ended his season, but But Jason Terry, the Jet is somebody who, yeah, I would definitely pattern my game around also.
There you go. My ideal shooting guard based on my size, and I try to make it at least compatible with what I bring to the game. So about similar size and a shooter, so I try to pattern my game a little bit around his.
So speaking of your game, of course, you've had a stint in Germany, and of course playing in Albania. I believe that's where you're playing right now.
Yes, I just finished up my third professional season out there in the country of Albania.
Well, congratulations. You know, I was just talking with Sean Wally before we got on the air, and, you know, he was mentioning that you're on the beach in Europe right now, man. So you know, life is good, and you won a championship. Congratulations on that.
Hey, I appreciate it. You know, I had to reward myself. You know, I saw the opportunity. So you definitely want to go out there on business, but once you get time to go ahead and get a little pleasure on it. I took a vacation out to Barcelona, so I did get a chance to see the beautiful beaches and just the scenery that Europe has to offer.
Now, Brandon, how did things differ between playing overseas in Germany and now what you experienced in Albania from the fans, from the style of play?
Just from the fans and just the culture. You know, it was a third world country, so it's very poverty-stricken. But at the same time, they don't put a big emphasis on, you know, the money, cars, and clothes, kind of how the States and maybe Germany with a little bit more wealthier people there. But they really put an emphasis on family and just coming together. So the games were, like, jam-packed. You know, people don't have much to cheer for. So once they found out they had a good team in the city, everybody, we had sold-out crowds pretty much every night. So as far as the fans, it was great. And I was their first American basketball player, and at that, an African-American basketball player. So You get all the LeBron James chants and all that stuff, MVP, so the selfies they were taking. So the fans were on a whole nother level as far as, you know, Germany. And the style of play was a little bit different. You know, they're like I say, they're still developing their league out there. But it was still a tough league. It was the first league in Albania and a good competition. But, you know, as those guys develop more and they get more Americans in their league, I believe it'll become a tougher competition.
How did that feel for you personally to be the first American, but also the first African American to play in Albania?
I really didn't understand what I was getting myself into until I got off that plane, and, you know, they really took a big interest in me being there. And they, you know, like you say, you walk on the streets and everybody just knowing your name and screaming out "Hog" and everything. So it really hits you that, you know, they're really taking interest in having American in their country, and they're doing everything they can to make me feel comfortable. So it made me feel good, and it made me want to give back to them, you know, as much as possible. So I found myself in the gym even more, in the weight room even more, just preparing myself, because the team that I did go to won the championship the previous year before, so I didn't want to fail any expectations. So they made it very clear on my way over that they expected a championship and what they expected, and my and my talent. So I just try to meet expectations, man, and give the people what they wanted, and it worked out for both ends.
Brandon Hogg joining us here on The Double, and maybe in some circles you might be called the boss. Man, so being over there in Albania, it sounds like that's something that you would like to frequent again. So, I mean, so if the opportunity arises, would you play there again? Or if there was an opportunity to play maybe in another league that might be a step up, would you take that route?
Yeah, that's the main goal as far as, you know, us European guys, American guys going to play over there is to move up every year. So it was kind of a contract where we had a three-month contract clause and a plus 1 year. So those guys wanted to win a championship, and they wanted to compete in what they call the Balkan League. They have EuroLeague overseas, and Balkan League is a step underneath that. So that is a situation where you have a team that plays in this a regular Albanian league, but it also plays in the Balkan League, to where they'll travel to different countries and play those countries. And it's a great opportunity as far as film and just to get to play against good competition. You know, they got a lot of guys in the Balkan League that I grew up on, that's seeing play on like the Division I level, like Indiana, Jordan Halls plays on one of the team out there in Serbia. So, and it would be just a great opportunity. I would definitely consider going back. Like I say, they treated me like a king, and you know, that's one thing you look for, is just being comfortable and making sure that it's a good situation for you. So it's definitely one of my situations I'm considering falling back on.
Now, I'm sure when you're growing up and, of course, playing in high school and college, your aspirations, of course, are making it to the NBA. But now being overseas, is the money lucrative enough to where you can say, man, you know, I could do this, you know, for a while? Or do you come back to the States and you say, man, let me get another job and let me see what's going on, you know, and try to make that next step?
Yeah, I mean, it's presenting so much more than money for me at this point. So that's why I think it's so intriguing to go back over every year, because it's an eye opener and you get so many different experiences. At the same time, you are getting paid, you know, everything's taken care of, so you're not coming out of pocket for anything. So it's nothing to complain about. Of course, I would like to be over back in the States playing in front of my family, but as you get older in your career and as a player, you try to, like I say, look for a place that you could call home. And the States right now, my game, how I play, is more of a Euro-style game. Like, I would really have to get in the gym this summer and transform my body as far as just being athletic and explosive to even match up with guys like Derrick Rose or, you know, Westbrook if I try the D-League or the NBA. So at this point in my career, I think I just want to keep trying to keep climbing that ladder overseas. It's definitely a good source of revenue if you get to the top leagues. But, you know, it's a grind at the end of the day. You know, nobody's discouraged. I'm not discouraged about my situation. I'm just every year just taking what's given to me, man. I'm trying to make the best of my opportunities. I got a championship this year, so I would like to see my money at least double up next year.
Brandon Hogg joining us here on The Double. And, Brandon, I know that last July we met at the Global Basketball Summer League event in Las Vegas. What do you have planned for this summer? Have you mapped out what your path is going to be moving forward?
Yeah, I just got back last week. So right now it's just, like I say, just getting back in the gym, training my body. Vegas is definitely an opportunity that I would like to try to do again and see what that comes out from it. But right now I have that team that wants me back. So it's just it's a waiting game. You know, I try to get, you got to get your resume together, your film together. You got to send it off to agents and teams, and you just pray for someone to send something back that, you know, they're showing interest in you. So every year is pretty much the same. Every summer is pretty much the same, just trying to get better in your game. And that's really all as players we can do is take care of, is just getting better and staying in shape, and then letting everything else play itself out. You know, you'll get that email out of nowhere, or you'll have a team that contacts you. So you just basically working out, waking up every day, checking your email, hoping that, you know, somebody's showing interest.
Now, are you your own agent and marketing firm where you're out there sending out the YouTube links and the highlight reels, or do you have friends and family helping you out to where you're not inundated trying to do everything yourself?
Yeah, right. Right now, I've learned how to, through the 3 years, I've learned how to, you know, put myself out there and just trying to be market my own brand, you know, as far as my name. It would be very beneficial if I could find a good agent. You know, that's the best route to go. But, you know, in this game, you know, you have to take it for what it is. You know, it's tough to find a good agent that's going to sit and represent you and put your name out there where it needs to be. So if they're not doing the work, nobody else is going to do it for you. So right now I'm the one making my YouTube tapes and send them links off and trying to personally contact these coaches. And, It's a struggle or half fun times, but you know, you just do it and just keep hopeful, man. You just can't give up. So that's just my mindset is going about it.
Yeah, Brandon, as you're saying, you know, if your agents or the people who are representing you can't do it, you're gonna have to step forward and make those things happen, which means that you're getting a chance to see a lot of your video, and you sound like a young man that definitely wants to make sure that you're bettering your game and making it complete. What are some parts of your game right now that you think would need to be sharpened up a little bit?
Right now, I feel like I have a lot to offer, you know, as far as shooting the ball, distributing the ball, running the team. What teams are looking for at the pro level, you know, you have a lot of guys that are good, but it's about being good. One guy explained it, you know, it's about being good consistently from game to game. Then once you get from game to game, you're just starting to get from play to play, and then you start getting, you know, you just got to keep breaking it down to where every possession that you're getting better. And as I watch my film, you know, you have mistakes and stuff that you want to eliminate. So it's just about consistency with me. You know, I have stretches where I look like a very good European player. Then you have stretches to where, you know, you're going back making mental mistakes, whether that's to fatigue or, you know, injury. But you just want to put complete solid games together and put consistent games together and show that you can bring a good efficiency to the game.
And now you're currently playing the point guard position. Is that correct?
Yes, both combo guard, point guard, and shooting guard.
Okay, good. The combo guard and the point guard. So, you know, that position has evolved so much over the past few years that it used to be to where if you're a point guard, you're the quarterback on the court. You had to be a great facilitator in running the offense. But now, recently, you having players such as Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry, they've kind of changed the game a little bit. So not only do you do those things, but if you're Steph Curry, you have a deadly outside shot as well. Do you see that you might have to evolve into that type of a player going forward?
Yes, for sure. It's kind of a two-lane highway with that. You'll see it as you go to combines and other guys. You have the guys who are very athletic and very quick and fast. So that's one avenue that you could take. But then the next avenue now, as far as like getting towards good shooting guard, point guard, is being able to really stroke the ball, because it opens up everything, because the ball screen is becoming more effective in the game today. So once you come off that ball screen, if you're able to knock that shot down consistently at a high rate like a Stephen Curry, you're very, very tough to guard, because it's such good screens and it's such execution at that level that you're going to get an open shot, and it really comes down to who can make that open shot or not on a consistent basis.
Brandon, what advice would you have for a AAU player, a high school basketball player that wants to get to the next level, wants to play in college and possibly professionally?
Well, just being true to your game, knowing your strengths and weaknesses. You know, you got guys that they really get in the gym, man. I mean, it's good to perfect your strengths, but just making sure that you're an all-around player, man. Just try to make, you know what I'm saying, perfect your weaknesses during the summer. Do not come back the next year the same player that you were last year, and that's what you really got to focus on. And just becoming more students of the game. You got guys that play the game all day long, and they don't take time to sit down and learn the game. You know, sit down and watch those guys that are the greatest and see how they operate. And that's really it. Becoming a student of the game, getting your mental aspect of the game. The physical is just a little part of it, but it's really a lot mental. So once you start thinking the game, I think that's when a player really develops.
Brandon, getting back to the fans' reaction in Europe, what does it mean to you to have them look at you, talk to you, and think of you as this great, you know, King James type awesome guy? They want your autograph, they want your picture. What does that mean to you?
And it means a lot, you know, coming from me, from somebody that I consider myself an underdog in the game. And that's the type of that days you dream about. You know, you see LeBron and those guys do that, and you realize that you might not reach that plateau. And then you go to a place like Albania, you got, like I say, like I got kids, just 100 kids, man. You it's unbelievable taking selfies with me after the game. And just knowing that these kids look up to you and they're coming to see you play. Like, the game doesn't start till 7, and I'm just in there shooting around at 6, and the kids are already in their seats because they know it's going to be sold out, and they're just sitting there asking for shots during the game, and I mean before the game. And it's a great feeling, and it brings the best out of you. Certain players, I don't know how they react to that, but it definitely brought the best out of me, and I appreciate the extra pressure, and it makes me focus more. So it's great, man. It just makes me turn into another level, another dog, just another athlete for me.
Brandon Hogg, great insight on the world of basketball and international basketball. Thank you for your time tonight. You can follow Brandon at Mr_Underrated on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Brandon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for the call.
Hey. All right. Good luck to you, Brandon.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
There goes Brandon Hogg. Second time we've had him on the show. A great guest and an awesome basketball player, Sean.
Yeah, awesome basketball player. Very headsy. You can tell that, you know, as far as a combo guard goes, that's the type of person that you want on the floor. I like the fact that he's mentioning that he's always looking to improve his game. That's great stuff.
Come on back after the break. We'll have guest number 2, Steve Sadmeyer from 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio in Seattle. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
We'll be right back.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name.
Cause you burn with the brush fade. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And we're waiting momentarily to link up with Steve Sandmeyer in Seattle. While we have a moment, Sean, you had an exciting weekend getting some more work on air for the NFHS Network.
Yes, I did. And so it was a lot of fun being down in Stockton, California, to call the CIF San Joaquin Section Championships for Division V Girls Softball. Man, that was a mouthful. And it was a fun weekend. You know, it was one of the things that, you know, I've always wanted to do, and I've talked with you about this, Sean, is just making sure that, you know, you stay busy and do different sports. And so this allowed me to do that. It was a great atmosphere, nice weather out there. And, you know, it didn't disappoint, you know. And so I did. I had a lot of fun calling those games, and it was exciting. There was a couple of catches out there that were just amazing out, you know, diving out in center field, outstretched, these young ladies were doing it. You know, just let you know that there's great sports all around.
Well, Sean, we'll have more time to talk about that later in the hour. And a guy that knows a thing or two about some play-by-play and analyst duties is with us now on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. That is Steve Sandmeyer, host of the Steve Sandmeyer Show on 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio in Seattle. Steve, what's going on?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Well, great. Thanks for being on, Steve. I know that you probably just ended your show. I believe it ended at 7 o'clock, correct?
It did, and that's my bad. I'm sorry I'm a little bit tardy, man.
Here no.
I get on my guests for not being ready, and then when I'm a guest on someone else's show, I'm not ready.
No, not at all. I mean, that, you know, that just shows your perseverance and how attention to detail you are. And so, that, you know, again, I thank you for being on.
It's good to be here. Let's talk a little Mariner baseball.
Let's talk about the Mariners. You know, Sean and I were talking over the break. You know, Sean said that the Mariners are 6-3 over the past 9, but 6-4 over the past 10. And looks like they're starting to get a little better at 17-20 on the season. But what do you think? Are the Mariners starting to find their stride a little bit?
Yeah, I think their starting pitching has really stabilized. I mean, the scoreless inning streak that James Paxton is on right now is a perfect example of that. And the fact that you can go 6-3 in a 9-game homestand and have one of those games be a loss involving Felix Hernandez, you know, that easily could have been a lot more. So I think right now the Mariners still obviously could use a little bit more help offensively. But remember, the things that weren't really going well for them at the start, at least over the first 2 weeks of the season, were their rotation and their bullpen. And I think we've seen both the rotation and the bullpen stabilize a little bit. So once the bats come around, you know, then we'll see even greater improvement. They're 3 games under 500, and, you know, guys, they really have not put together a string of good baseball yet, meaning that their pitching, their hitting, their bullpen, and their defense are all playing at an acceptable level. It's always been one or two of those areas, sometimes three of those areas. So the fact that, you know, they really haven't strung together a nice little run of baseball and they're still just kind of hovering around 500, I think is telling. I think over the course of a 6-month regular season, that the baseball season exposes good teams, it exposes bad teams, it exposes talent, it exposes weaknesses. And I truly don't believe that the talent of this team has been exposed. Sure, they're going to have their struggles offensively, but I think they're a better defensive team than they have shown over the first 6 weeks. They can be a better fundamental team. It's been terrible on the base paths, and their situational hitting has been bad. They can improve in that. And we're starting to see what I started the answer with is the starting pitching. We've seen that stabilize, and I think we're going to see a little bit more of that. So now that the pitching is kind of calmed down a little bit, so to speak, I think some of the other areas are going to follow, and we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of this season.
Well, no doubt about it. We know that Felix Hernandez is going to do his thing. But the biggest surprise, I mean, we knew that Jim Paxton was going to actually be a solid pitcher, but 20 scoreless innings, that has to be a great sign for Lloyd McClendon.
Yeah, Paxton really struggled early with his command, and not this last start yesterday against the Red Sox, but two starts ago. He somehow got through six innings without allowing a run. He was not sharp, but that should give you an indication of the guy's talent, that he doesn't have his best stuff, and he's able to give you six shutout innings. So he's a guy who I think has limitless potential because of just the physical stuff and also his release point. He is 6'4", 6'5", and he's throwing upper 90s, and it's coming at your kneecaps from, you know, a pretty high release point, three-quarter delivery. That's some serious downward plane against opposing hitters. And you've got a wipeout breaking ball on top of that. So he's got an opportunity to become something really special, and I think we're just kind of scratching the surface with him. It's always going to be about him repeating that delivery. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, and when you're 6'4 or 6'5, it's a lot of arms and legs coming at you. It's tough to stay consistent, but he's been able to do that over his last three or four starts. And again, I don't think it's going to be something where he's just going to overpower people, but boy, you get that kind of stuff over the course of six or seven innings, and you do that each start in and out. And you're going to have your stumbles. You're going to have games where you just don't have it. But I think we're going to see a guy in the future that's going to be a 200-plus inning guy. Maybe not this year because he really hasn't had a full season in the bigs yet. Obviously, last year was cut short with injury. But I think eventually he's going to be one of those horses at the top of the rotation to go along with Felix. And I think we're getting just a glimpse of that now. Again, maybe not this year, but certainly in the next couple of years, if he stays healthy, which is always the caveat with him after what he went through last year.
Steve, what do you think it's going to take for Robinson Cano to get back to the 300, 310 hitter he can be?
It's really odd. He actually is among the league leaders in balls that have gone in excess of 100 miles an hour off the bat. I mean, he is absolutely tagging the ball. Doesn't have anything to show for it. This is truly one of his slowest starts in terms of his career. So I think there's a little cause for concern, but I don't know. I don't think you forget to hit overnight. And I think he still is the best pure hitter this organization has seen since Edgar Martinez. He is expanding the strike zone a little bit. He's swinging at a few more balls out of the zone than he did last year. Maybe he's being a little too aggressive. But I'm not too concerned overly about Robinson Cano. He'll eventually come around. This is just one of his slower starts of his career. He's still an incredible hitter to all fields. He's never been a power hitter, even though the numbers would suggest otherwise. You know, he had a couple home runs, seasons of over 30 at Yankee Stadium. I think he had 32. He's just been a line drive hitter, and those balls went out of those parks. So he's going to hit. He's going to hit to all fields. But, yeah, I mean, he even admits himself. He said this past week that he's not giving the team enough and he's not performing up to his standards. I don't know if it's any adjustment. I'm still probably in the Lloyd McClendon book where I'm just going to roll him out there hitting third in the order, and he'll figure things out. A guy that has that kind of pedigree and that kind of track record, it's not by accident. So we've seen him start out slow before. We saw him start out a little bit slowly last year and then come on to have a pretty solid season, and I would expect the same here, although this start is even slower than last year. Again, this is part of getting the offense going. They need more out of him. Seager's doing his part. Cruz is doing more than his part. Cano needs to do his part.
Steve, who is the odd man out when Austin Jackson comes back to take over center field for Seattle? Is it the pride of South Kitsap, Willie Bloomquist, Justin Ruggiano, or dare we say, Dustin Ackley?
Yeah, I really wish it would be Willie Bloomquist, because they already have a couple of other guys that can do what he does, especially now that Brad Miller is the super utility man, or at least that's how Lloyd McClendon wants to use them. You know, they paid him, Willie Bloomquist, last year, 2-year contract at $5.5 million, so he's getting a guaranteed $3 million this year. I'm not sure if the finances come into play. I know that Lloyd McLennan is certainly partial to veterans, so we'll see how that pans out with a guy like Willie Bloomquist, who's been around the block a ton of times. Dustin Ackley, I really don't know what to say anymore about him. They have options in left field. They have options in left field that obviously are left-handed hitters, even a guy like Seth Smith, who we've seen play left field a little bit. They certainly have Brad Miller now available for left. He doesn't really seem to have a spot. So if I had to do it in order, I would probably say Willie Bloomquist 1, Dustin Ackley 2, as far as the odd man out when Austin Jackson gets back. It will be interesting to see where they end up hitting Austin Jackson in the order, because he's really not a leadoff man. He has hit leadoff in the past and has done that, but he's not a true leadoff hitter. And I like the combination between Seth Smith and Brad Miller, even though it's just last week for Miller. Seth Smith has done a good job when it's been called upon atop the order. So we'll see what happens maybe when Austin Jackson comes back. Who knows, maybe he heads down in the order, they give him a soft landing, and they keep letting guys like Brad Miller and Seth Smith lead off.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that Lloyd McLennan is thinking about as far as making sure there's consistency in the batting lineup.
He needs to figure out really what he can get at the top and bottom of that order. I mean, we can all pencil in Cano, Cruz, Seager, 3, 4, 5, but up and down that lineup, he's been searching. I think it's somewhere around 29 different lineups that he's already put out there on the year. And he's obviously, injuries have to do with that. You know, you lose a couple guys here and there, and you got guys that are struggling. But he's got to get some consistency on both ends of the middle of that order. Again, even with Cano struggling, the middle of the order as a group cumulatively is still doing its work. Obviously, Nelson Cruz doing the lion's share of that work, but you know, let's not forget what Kyle Seager has given them. If they could just get, I'm not even talking about 1 and 2. I'm talking about 1 or 2 in the order, and I'm not talking about 7 and 8 and 9. Maybe just 7 or 7 and 8. You just get a couple more players to hit in front and behind the middle of that order. I think that'll be enough, and you supplement that with the pitching they've gotten, and we're going to see more wins and losses.
Steve Sandmeyer joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Steve, we haven't talked enough about Nelly Cruz and his unconscious play that he's had thus far in this early season. I mean, he's batting 340, 15 home runs, 30 RBIs, on-base percentage is through the roof at 395. I mean, can he keep this blistering pace going?
I don't know, but I'm sure not going to question it. I've never seen a run like this. Last time I saw a player just run roughshod through a league over this stretch of time, at least in a Mariner uniform, was Ken Griffey Jr. It's absolutely stupid what he's doing. But what's amazing to me is that opposing managers and opposing pitchers are still trying to throw to him. Could not believe he got something to hit in the game that he won on Friday night, 2-1, and when he wins it in the bottom of the ninth. Boy, I mean, shoot, you had first base open. A full count pitch, he gets one center cut. On top of that, just the fact that other pitchers, and especially left-handed pitchers, he's got 7 home runs against left-handed pitchers, and I think only in about 25 at-bats. It's just ridiculous. But for whatever reason, left-handers, when they face him, are still trying to sneak a fastball inside on him. And you see what he does. He just drops his hands. He gets the barrel out in front, and he hits it a mile and a half. So I'm curious to see maybe on the second go-through, if you will, playing these teams again for the second time around in months 2, 3, 4, 5 of the season, how they may go on end up pitching to him. But remember, you got Kyle Seager hitting behind him. You got Robbie Cano who's hitting in front. So you hope that Cano starts to heat up a little bit and get on base, because you can protect a guy just as easily with a runner on base than you can, you know, depending on which guy you put in the order behind him. I'm not going to get in Nelson Cruz's way. The average and the on-base percentage, that has to regress. He's a career 270 hitter. But you know what? That's above average. Career average now is around 250. And the chance for a guy to go 270 is it's pretty impressive over a career now that's expanded over 10 years. And I really missed the boat on him a little bit earlier. I thought he was a little bit more of a donkey, a free swinger, and a guy that would just hit bombs and strike out a ton. And, yeah, he does strike out a little bit. But the fact that he can win a game when it's a 1-1 game in the eighth, not with a home run but with a base hit to left field. He can win a game when it's a 3-3 game and he hits a double or a sacrifice fly. He's a little bit more of an accomplished hitter than he is necessarily just a pure slugger. And that's something that it's been fun to watch unfold.
Yeah, it is. It's so fun to watch Nelly Cruz do what he does. And of course, in Baltimore, you know, he was doing the same thing there. And as you're mentioning, you know, of course, being in the AL West, you know, getting the chance to see some of these pitchers a second time around, what do you think is do you think the Houston Astros are actually going to keep this blistering pace going, or are they going to wind up slowing down and the rest of the league's going to catch up with them?
I keep saying they're going to slow down. It's 6 weeks into this, and I'm waiting for it to happen. But I don't know. I just think outside of Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh, they just don't have the starting pitching to sustain. Now, offensively, they are hitting the ball at an enormous rate in terms of home runs. In fact, they're on pace to become the greatest home run hitting team in terms of percentage of their runs. So if all or you know the majority of their offense comes off the long ball, and power hitting kind of ebbs and flows, and you really only have those two horses in your rotation with Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh, I think it's going to be tough for them to sustain the run they're on. I mean, they're off to their best franchise start ever after whichever game it is. I mean, it was their best after 25, best after 30, best after 35. They're just going to keep setting records, and at some point, there's going to be a regression there. But you know how these things work. It's across all sports. You know, the longer you stay in a game or you stay in a season, the more confident you get. And when you're a confident player or you're a confident team, you know, you overachieve. You do a lot of things that weren't expected out of you, and you all of a sudden change the way you look at yourself or a team looks at itself. And, you know, the longer the Astros are in it and playing on that house money, the more confident they become. And then, you know, they become a dangerous team. We see that across all sports, high school, college, professional, in any of the major sports. So there's also house money. You know, they've got a handful game lead over teams like the Los Angeles Angels and, of course, the Mariners. But, you know, I still don't think it's going to be something to where I'd be concerned about. I mean, if it were double digits and we were talking 12 or 15 games out in front, then we'd have a conversation. But right now, 6 weeks into the season, even if it is seven or eight games, I don't know. I don't really look at that and sweat the Astros. But with the second wild card, they're certainly going to be a player as long as they stay above 500. And right now they've built themselves a nice little cushion over 500. So they might be in it a lot longer than any of us expected.
Steve, as you know, the playoffs are in full swing in hockey and the NBA. And there is nowhere for either of those leagues to house teams in Seattle, but there are two competing possible arenas. We all know about the Chris Hansen Arena in SoDo that's been ongoing a possibility for the last few years, and now this new potential arena near the old Longacre site in Tukwila. Is either one going to take the lead, take charge, and really become a reality?
I think the political climate in Seattle ultimately is going to get in the way of getting the Seattle arena done. It's an absolute maze of red tape and the turnover and the fact that the Initiative 91 passed so overwhelmingly. Before the Sonics left town, there was a measure put up to the voters of Initiative 91. That basically made it an ordinance, made it a law, that any professional sports arena or stadium that was built with public money would have to turn a profit, and then obviously there would be some collateral left back to the city. Invariably, it would ultimately be the county, too. And it passed by, like, a landslide overwhelming majority. So in the sports world, we kind of are in our own bubble. But there are a lot of registered voters out there that are casual sports fans at best. And when they see tax money and they see, you know, multi-million-dollar, half-billion-dollar arenas, they kind of cringe a little bit. I just think that the fact that they would have to rechange the memo of understanding to make it hockey first, they would have to get the investors all lined up to make it viable, to pencil out for the city hockey first. I just think there's too many obstacles for the city arena plan. Not to mention the fact that there's going to be a few lawsuits, the Longshoremen, the Port of Seattle. I'm very curious to see whether the Mariners are going to open their mouth this time. They've already issued a no comment. There's just too many obstacles in the way of the SoDo Arena plan, I think. And again, it all comes down to the political opposition whether it's the Port of Seattle, whether it's the Seattle City Council itself, or whether it's the timing and the fact that they wouldn't be able to get enough hockey investors to get in bed with Chris Hansen and make that thing pencil out. The Tukwila Arena plan to me is a lot more viable. Number one, you've got a city and a mayor that has already been on record saying that he will expedite the process. Number two, I think any time citizens here fully privately financed, that's something that they can all tolerate, even the non-sports fans, the casual sports fans that I mentioned. And number three, you've got a team and a league that's chomping at the bit to come. Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, has been on record three or four times going, all you got to do is build the arena. I would love to get into that market. And I don't know, I could see the Tukwila thing getting through with a few more, much easier, with fewer obstacles. Here's the problem. The Tukwila thing is only an idea right now. The investors have an idea. They have purchased property, and they're going through the permit process. But it appears that the expansion fee for an NHL franchise is going to be $500 million. So you have to obviously get the arena built, privately financed. You've got to buy the land, privately financed, of course. And now you got to pay a $500 million expansion fee to the NHL. So do the math. I mean, we're talking around $1 billion that these NHL investors are going to have to come up with, and that's just to get off the ground, not to mention all the costs of running a team and everything else. So even though there's big money and there's a lot of investors and a lot of people with that money that want to see hockey here and the league coming here, right now Tukwila is just an idea. It's just down on a cocktail napkin. But if I had to pick and I had to handicap which one would probably work, which one would make it, I think Tukwila is a much more viable option than Seattle again, because I just don't see the political climate, you know, getting behind that arena and thwarting all of its other opposition.
Yeah, you know, and Steve, you mentioned some great points there as far as the Tukwila project. From what I've seen, it does. It looks like it was just written down on a napkin. It's a very vague diagram, so they haven't really come up with an actual plan for that arena. My biggest concern is this. Over on 405 near South Center, you know, of course, there's going to be, you know, some pushback, I'm sure, as far as traffic and congestion is concerned. Do you think that might halt the arena from being built over there?
It's a possibility, but geez, the economic impact to that region, I mean, outside of the mall there, that place is just a ghost town. So I think, I'm sure that, you know, the impact studies and everything will certainly have traffic be a concern. And I don't think it would be a situation where, unlike Seattle, where they would actually have to create an overpass or maybe even a road or cut off a road like they are for the Soto Arena. Again, another obstacle in the way of that. I think the financial impact it would have on Tukwila in that area would far outweigh any concerns about traffic. But, you know, I just think that when you have people that want to get it done on the city level, you've got local politicians there that want to get it done on their level, that's the end game, in my opinion. The political climate in Seattle is terrible for an arena, and the one in Tukwila is, they're practically rolling out the red carpet saying, come on aboard.
Now, with the Soto project that you'd mentioned, do you think that Chris Hansen has really dug in on this one? There's no way that he would find another area to possibly build an arena? I mean, is he that stubborn to go against the longshoremen, you know, year in and year out to try to get this arena built?
Well, it depends. I mean, if he gets the city backing and the finances, although, you know, Tim Burgess, the city council president, has been on record saying if they're gonna do an arena in Seattle, they would almost have to completely eliminate the public money involved. I don't know how that's gonna play out. I think if the price were right, meaning if the concessions were made by the city and he was able to use that public money, and then he got a hockey investor in there that was able to work with him to make it pencil out for him, he would consider that. It's just that he has done so much work already. He's already purchased the property for the Soto Arena. He's already done all the impact studies. He's already done the environmental work. He paid, he flipped the bill for all that. He's already in this thing for about $50 million alone based on all the property he bought, all the studies he's done, and everything in terms of his efforts to get it together. So he's already pretty much pot committed on the Soto Arena site. So I'd be surprised if it were somewhere else, because even if it were a situation where it could be the old Key Arena or even the Memorial Stadium, remember, you've got the Gates Foundation right next door. They got just a little bit of pull, and it's zoned. The Soto Arena area is zoned for that kind of use, and it would be in Key Arena too, but I think it's pretty much all or nothing, the Soto site for Chris Hansen.
Now, Steve, we want to let you run to get to your evening and your family, but I just have to ask, with this Soto Arena and the issue of the MOU, why not have the private money that's being talked about for Tukwila get together with Hansen to squash the city money, the county money, and have those issues put to bed?
Well, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that maybe Tukwila and Hansen get together and they end up doing something in Tukwila. He can always sell that property. But there's no real motive for the Tukwila investors to get involved with Hansen in the city when they have their own thing pretty much ready to go. I mean, they've already greased the skids for it to happen in Tukwila. So they can do a hockey-first arena there. Their hockey best investors get obviously involved, and then when an NBA team comes available, then Hansen can come talk to them. But if they want to do it ahead of time and it's ripe for the picking, then it's not beyond the realm of possibility that maybe Hansen eventually could just throw his hands up in the air with the city, go talk with the hockey investors and get something done in Tukwila. I think eventually they're probably going to have to talk. I know that Chris Hansen has spoken with some of the hockey investors before. Nothing got done. I don't know if he's reached out to them since. But, yeah, I just think this whole thing for Chris Hansen is unfortunately going to be one of the situations where timing is everything. And remember, the league has shown no desire, no interest, no sort of urgency to get a basketball team back in Seattle. And that's a big part of it, too. The MOU is only good for 5 years. We're a year and a half into it. And the NBA has shown no signs of even remotely considering either expanding or relocating a team over the next several years. So I'm curious to see how that will play out as well.
Steve Sandmeyer, thanks for your time and expertise. You can listen to the Steve Sandmeyer Show weekdays 3 to 7 on 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio in Seattle. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Always good, Steve.
I should not have been late. I'm sorry, guys.
No right. Issue at all. You're a busy, busy guy. You got more important things like your own show.
That's
all
right.
Guys, right. We'll see you later.
All right. Take care, Steve.
Later.
There goes Steve Sandmeyer in and around Seattle with more knowledge than a world book.
Man, you know, there was a plethora of knowledge. We covered a lot of Mariner stuff. And of course, the arena issue is always something that is very important to, you know, all the fans of the Pacific Northwest, and hopefully there will be something to come out of, whether it's NHL or the NBA. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to recap the show, talk a little bit more sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you're burning with the brush flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to Mind Blowing Radio here on the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd and Don Newsom handling the controls in the studio. And, you know, we came back to Hall of Fame, and we have to mention the 2015 Washington State University Hall of Fame class has been announced. And on the Double, past guest Marcus Trufant is in the 2015 Hall of Fame class for Washington State University.
And you know, Sean, that's very well deserved. Of course, Marcus does, you know, played most of his career with the Seattle Seahawks and, you know, does some great things in the community in the Pacific Northwest and Tacoma native. And, you know, couldn't happen to a better guy. Of course, he has his show on 710, the Barber Shop, you know, doing some great things, man. And so, again, you know, congratulations to Marcus Trufant for making it into the Wazoo Hall of Fame.
Now, Sean, right before Steve Sandmeyer joined us, you were telling everyone what was going on with the NFHS Network. You were back on air at NFHSnetwork.com as well as the NFHS Network app, and you were covering analyst duties for high school girls' fast pitch, correct?
Yeah, and you know, what a great sport to actually watch, you know, and I marvel at the young ladies, especially the pitchers, because you know, I called two games between two of the same teams. As a matter of fact, the Ripon Indians from in Northern California actually took on the Houston Huskies. And so, you know, in order for Ripon to actually win the state title, they had to win the first game. And they had the daunting task of if they beat Houston the first game, they played Houston again. But one of the things I marveled at were the pitchers. So there's not really any such thing as a relief pitcher. So that young lady pitches the whole game. And then the next game, you think there's some type of a rotation. Well, no, the same two young ladies come out and they pitched again. And to do that wind up underhand pitch that at, you know, 60 miles an hour and have a little change up on it from time to time, I think is a great talent. And, you know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot of watching these young ladies play, the true grit, the determination, and the will to win. You know, those were all in play for the CIF Sac Joaquin Section Championships.
Now, Sean, one important question. Do you think you could hit that rise ball?
No, not even close. You know, as a matter of fact, as soon as the ball left the fingertips of the pitcher, I'd probably just duck out of the batter's box and probably run and hide or something like that. That ball is bigger than a baseball, and something tells me if that penetrates in the ribs, that's going to leave a mark.
So now under your belt for the NFHS Network, you have called football, you have called basketball, you have called track and field, you have called cross country, now fast pitch. Have I missed anything?
No, you haven't. And, you know, maybe, you know, if some of the NFHS crew is listening, I would love to call, like, you know, golf. I think that would be cool. You know, just to put another feather in the cap and learn some things and, you know, maybe wrestling as well. So that would be a lot of fun. So, I'm enjoying myself as far as getting the experience. And I know it's definitely going to pay off here in the near future.
You mentioned golf. Great segue to a new sport and something you got to experience a couple weekends back that you're also going to experience here in the near future with Fox Sports.
Yeah, so Fox Sports, Sean, has embarked on the USGA Golf Tour, which is very exciting. So this is the first year for Fox to take that on. And they started out with what's called four-ball play. And we put that on Fox Sports 1 a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. Very interesting the way four-ball is played. So you're teamed up with one of your buddies, and it's a round robin that you play continuously, and you're just knocking each other out only, you know, until you win the championship. And so it was a great week to actually see that. The weather in San Francisco out on the bay wasn't the best, but, you know, it was exciting. You know, there was a great crowd out there for that. And of course, as you're mentioning, you know, just the start of things, looking forward to actually being up there in your neck of the woods in the Pacific Northwest in the middle of June for the U.S. Open. Very, very excited for that, Sean Wally.
Sean, I'm glad you will be working it and holding it down for us. And that is the one event I am very sad I'm going to miss, because I will be, of course, back on another adventure with the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, I'll have to take it with a grain of sand or salt, and Australia will have to do versus the U.S. Open.
Yeah, oh, darn. You're going to be in Australia. And so, you know, and I'm sure, because the weather's always beautiful there, and just a beautiful part of the world. Sure, it's going to be about 90 degrees, and, you know, if you get the chance, man, get some snorkeling in, because it's fun.
So working your first golf television event, how was that similar and or different to the football and baseball that we're used to working for the major networks?
Well, attention to detail is key, and that's no matter what sport you call or produce from behind the scenes. And so, you know, your producers, tech managers, directors, they always want to make sure that they are painting the picture perfectly. And golf is so great because of the majestic views and the backgrounds and the backdrops that are there. And, you know, you'd think that maybe it would be taken a little lighter than maybe a baseball or a football, but that's not the case. I mean, you know, everybody has their role to play when they're putting this on behind the scenes. And so, you know, it's very frenetic, if you will. And so they're early mornings and they're late evenings. And so it's a lot different than what we do in football, Sean, because, you know, maybe we'll get there semi-early in the morning, but by sometime around 5 o'clock, you know, everything's done, the fans are gone, and you're heading home. But in golf, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more time, a little bit more of a recap, if you will. And, you know, you want to make sure that you're starting the next day properly because, you know, unlike football, which is one day, golf is upwards of 3, maybe 4 or 5 days.
So that's awesome that you've got a new experience and another sport under your belt, and you'll be continuing with it on into the summer. And, you know, same with the NFHS Network, you know, more notches in the belt, more feathers in the cap to give you more experience and make you more well-rounded.
Yeah, and you know, hey, when I grow up, maybe I'll have a position like you with the Harlem Globetrotters, man.
Hey, I've tried to get you to send that email, but I don't think you ever did. So,
oh man, well, you know, we're working on it. We're definitely working on it. You know, just trying to figure out some things and how to put that in the schedule.
So we had Brandon Hogg on earlier in the show, a great basketball player that I had got to meet in July of last summer in Las Vegas at the Global Basketball Summer League. He plays professionally overseas, and he had some good words of wisdom for those looking to make it to the next level in basketball. And one of those basketball players is one Devon Boyd, and he is making a change in his collegiate basketball career.
Yes, you know, Devon is definitely, you know, making a change, you know. One of the things for those of the listeners that don't know, it's my son that plays basketball, played at Chaminade University over the past couple of years in Honolulu. And so, you know, Division II basketball, it was something that was, you know, very challenging. You know, something that was challenging for him to actually, you know, get to the, you know, play at that next level from high school. And he rose to the occasion. Now what he wants to do is, John, is he wants to turn the chapter, if you will. And what he's doing is he and I have had this extensive conversation on what he wanted to do. Did you want to take a look at Division I? Did you want to look at another Division II? So he's had offers and calls from a lot of colleges from around the country and around the area, especially on the West Coast, on coming to their school. And the big thing was is that what he told me was is that he wanted to take a look at the junior college. And I thought that that was initially, you know, a bad idea until he explained to me why. And he said that, you know, Dad, I just want to play at the junior college level and ball out and, you know, just play the best basketball that I can possibly play, increase my stock, and then get looked at a Division I school. And he has aspirations of playing in the Pac-12. And so that's what he's looking to do. So we're going to be heading up to Vancouver here in a week. And we're also taking a look at Santa Barbara, some colleges down there as well, and maybe a couple of schools in Oregon, and then he's going to make his decision. So, you know, it's a lot of fun, you know, to go through this process, but at the same time, gosh, you know, the recruiting process is a headache, man. I can't wait till it's over.
So it's got to feel great once again for Devon to feel wanted and to feel some love from these schools.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I have to be careful on the you know, the wanted word, because I truly believe that Chaminade was a good place for him. I just believe that they just didn't know where they wanted to place Devon. And so you're looking at a point guard or a combo guard that stands at about 6'2". He's at about 185, 190 pounds. The kid can shoot like Steph Curry, and he can jump out the gym. And he has good ball handling skills and is working to make himself better. And he's under the tutelage of On the Double with the Double S Express guest Gus Armstead and the Pro-Am League that he has here in Sacramento. So he's got some great training, some great tutelage, an excellent head on his shoulders. And I'm just excited to see what's about to happen for him in the near future.
So if I heard you right, there's a potential for a Double S reunion next week.
There, you know, that's a good possibility. You're right. You know, and so, you know, of course, we're always looking to have great guests on the show, and, you know, we can, you know, look into seeing if we can have Armstead on the show. Like to see if we can get his son on. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our Armstead family is doing awesome things in sports for sure.
Yeah, but you're talking about me, though, the reunion next week, to where you're coming down to Vancouver. Man, but yes, definitely. So I'm looking forward to that.
Sean, it's been a great show. Thank you to Brandon Hogg, international basketball player, doing great things in Albania, winning a championship and telling us what it was like to play overseas once again. And, of course, Steve Sandmeyer, host of the Steve Sandmeyer Show on 1090 The Fan in Seattle.
Two awesome guests on the show and giving us their perspectives. Of course, Brandon giving us the perspective on what it takes to keep grinding, man. And Brandon, keep that up, man. I believe that you have a strong future ahead of you, and it's only just beginning. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, with Steve Sandmeyer, just always awesome, man, with a plethora of knowledge. I wish we could have gotten to the football realm. And, you know, but we did good, Sean, talking about NHL and possible NBA and getting a chance to talk about those Mariners. Man, show number 103 is in the book, Sean Wally.
That's right. We keep plugging along. Great to be back live here on the show, and we will be back live again next week, which next week is Memorial Day, a little bit early.
Yes.
So definitely have a great weekend. Everybody be safe out there in your travels, your barbecues, and don't forget to turn on the Double Memorial Evening.
Yeah, you know, and the biggest thing is of course, with the Memorial Day coming up, you know, make sure you're grabbing those barbecues and you're tuning in to On the Double with the Double S Express. You can also catch us at double-s-express.com. You can also catch us on Stitcher and iTunes as well. And, of course, it's been a great, great show. And, you know, I'd like to leave you guys, or Double S Express would like to leave you with this. Hey, you're not in the game until you actually take a shot. And when you take a shot, we hope it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. For Don Newsom, the engineer, Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd. You've been listening to a DSX LLC production on the Double with the Double S Express. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war, you can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the...